You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahiahi mari e tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toka ingoa.
Ko so fia toku ingoa, nau mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. We're so back, baby!
We're so back!
How are you?
I feel like I'm so rusty. I'm like, I haven't been here for like a month, I feel.
No, it's been a while.
No, I'm back on the airwaves.
We're so back.
We're so back.
And we have a gorgeous show for you all. If I can name, Maya, what have you got today?
Yeah, I caught up with Ruby Wilkinson about her work currently on at the Arts House Trust at Par Homestead as a part of the group show A Moment to Hold. So what have you got?
I had a kōrero with Elise McDermott about her current show on at Room Gallery Pop Sediment.
Te aha ofakara. We'd love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tuku patsahi mai. You can text us on 5395 5325. Why am I Arane? Or give us a call in the studio on 309-3879.
Also, after the show, kaua e ware ware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki e nei kōrero anō hei pakihere rokiroki maronga i te paitokutoku o Erirangi Pōho me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Let's get into the show.
What's it all for?
Various Artists.
Ruby Wilkinson is an emerging artist whose painting explores aspects of the environment, specifically those close to her and her memories, leaning into her surroundings as well as her painterly intuition to produce these beautiful works that dance with bold swooping gestures and vibrant earthly colours that sing out to those saturated within nature. Her work Parade is currently showing as part of A Moment to Hold at the Arts House Trust at Par Homestead, an exhibition bringing together seven female artists engaged in painting and drawing, featuring works by Brunel Diaz, Hannah Ireland, Christina Pata'ali, Joanna Pegley, Kate Small, Barbara Chuck, and Ruby Wilkinson. Wilkinson's work Parade showcases a stunning large-scale sculptural curtain made up of eight calico panels that have each been treated as a painting in itself, coming together to form a breathtaking display of movement and colour that pulls viewers into its world of warm sunsets and memories, allowing a moment to hold within the fleeting memories of time. I caught up with Ruby about her overall practice and work within the show.
Hello, my name's Ruby Wilkinson and I'm a painter based in Tāmaki Makaurau and I paint abstraction.
Your work Parade is currently being shown within A Moment to Hold, a wonderful group exhibition shown at the Arts House Trust at Par Homestead, which brings together works by seven female artists working within painting and drawing. I'd like to start off by delving into the kind of beginnings of your piece within the show Parade, which was made during your time at the Quarry Arts Centre last summer. Would you like to tell me a bit more about your time there and how the specific piece started to arise?
Yeah, sure. That work was made the summer, last summer, 2024 to 2025. Is that the summer?
I don't know. I'm all put out with this news.
Yes, I'm so confused. But I was up there staying at my dad's in Whangarei Heads in McLeod Bay, and I managed to get a studio at Whangarei Arts Quarry, which is just like such a wonderful place, like got so much history. There used to be like a leather tannery there, and there's still like ceramics practicing, like lots of people practicing ceramics and artists living there. It's just like such a special place. It feels like maybe it should be like 30 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like lovely. It's like in this little, held this little pocket of like the, yeah.
It's really beautiful. And I had a studio there in this room called the Scallop Room. And the roof was like shaped like a scallop. And it was like quite a bizarre building. I think it was kind of like the buildings had all been like handmade. Like clay. It's like very,
wow.
It's called clay building.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I don't know.
Yeah. So I was working in there and it was really, really hot that summer. And I would wake up and swim every day and just take it really slow and then go to the studio in the afternoon and started using fabric dye to make the piece. So deconstructed, it's like eight panels makes up Parade, and so I'd work on the panels on the floor with fabric dye, and it was kind of interesting because my medium is oil paint.
Mm.
And
all of a sudden I was like, I'm going to do this fabric dyeing project. And it's a complete new way of painting. Like, there's no gesso, it's very raw. You can't control it as easily. And I wasn't used to, like, the pigments and stuff. So, yeah, that was, like, a interesting thing to, like, navigate, like, a complete new way of painting, but I'd committed to it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that when I was writing my questions, I wanted to say shift, but then I changed it to more of, like, an amplification, maybe. Like, a really, like, push out of your art practice, a really, like, dive headfirst into a more sculptural installation-forward way of working and presenting paintings. Your paintings, as you said, normally being, yeah, like, oil paint, stretched, often framed and of a smaller scale. What influenced you to work big and with this, like, large scale installation?
Yeah, well, actually, the work was my dealer, Yana Millers, had asked me to be part of this group show that was going to be curated by Erica Van Zon, who's another one of her artists. And Erica was, like, working on this show that was, like, about, like, nature and responding to, I think, maybe more particularly, like, plants. And she had wanted me to do a painting on the wall for the exhibition, and I just, like, could not. Like, the idea of, like, painting on the wall was just so scary. So I was like, no, I can't. But I had actually been wanting to make a curtain for a really long time because I've made quite a few paintings of curtains in the past, or, like, use them as material to, like, draw from when I'm working, because I think that a curtain is such a beautiful thing. Like, it divides, like, public and private life, and yeah, it's just like, yeah, there's so many, like, nice, like, symbols around a curtain and having a curtain, and that was something I've been interested in for a while, and it felt right to, like, instead of a wall drawing, like, have it still be of that scale but portable, or it can move around. And it's interesting because it is, like, my biggest work, but it is the most portable work. Like, I can fold it down into a tiny box and it can go, like, it's been down to Queenstown, now it's in Tamaki. Like, it's actually so much easier to transport around than a painting on canvas, which is really interesting.
Wonderful. And working at such a large scale, I would imagine it would force you to pivot the ways you would normally approach a work. Could you tell me a bit about the painting process of this piece?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, like I said earlier, it's 8 panels. So I pre-cut calico pieces. I think I had about, like, 12 panels I was working on actively, and I'd work on the floor and I'd use acrylic paints as well to paint. I kind of was treating them as, like, 12 separate paintings and, like, trying not to imagine what it would look like as a whole. I did know that they would get stuck together eventually, but sewed together, but yeah, I was thinking about them individually, and a mix between painting on them with acrylic and also putting them in baths. I'd make, like, dye baths and soak them overnight and wash them. And yeah, I really enjoyed dyeing the material and then washing it in the sink, like, scrubbing fabric was really nice, because you never get to do that with a painting on canvas. Like,
yeah, it's already so structured.
Super, like, like, tactile process, very, like, hands-on. And yeah, like I said before, like, there wasn't a lot of control. Like, I did really struggle with the, like, pigments of fabric dye. Like, I think they're quite, like, plasticky in a way. Or, like, I was really struggling to get the kind of colours that I really wanted.
Yeah, it's a big shift from oil paint that has that red, that oil makes it really rich in those, those pigments, rather than that acrylic, which is very dry, is really fast.
Totally.
And it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, it's so, like, such a different medium. But at the same time, like, because I was up north and it was so hot and I was using these mediums, like, the panels would dry in, like, an hour. Like, when I lay them out on the grass outside the studio, they'd dry really quickly. And, like, that's something that you just don't get with oil as well.
No.
Like, that was kind of beautiful. It was, yeah, a fast way of working. And then, yeah, just, like, with the calico, because the paint would go right through it, there's no gesso, it's, like, very, like, yeah, dyeing, it's, like, not even painting in a way. It's, like, so different, I reckon.
Yeah, it, I don't know if you looked at Helen Frankenthaler, that very, like, water fluid movement, and I love the, I don't know, I feel like with a regular painting, it's like you've got the canvas and the gesso and then the paint. It's really layered, but with this no gesso, it's like they're one and the same. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
They really just like the fibers and the fabric and the dye just like fully. And it's maybe like the fabric, the color code becomes more of like an active player in the process.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think when you're painting on canvas, like there's so much privacy. You can like do a painting and like cover it up, and like only you know about those kind of ghost paintings underneath the canvas. But on this calico, like everything was on display. Like it was very like transparent, and there was a lot of fuck ups as well. Like when I was painting, there was lots of like really bad dyeing experiments and like stuff like that. But yeah.
I was going to say, I love the fluidity and movement about this work. The colour seems to, really seep into this raw calico, forming their own organic forms, and then they break into these bold acts of gesture and then sink back into each other. Mm. When it comes to the painting process, is there a kind of like point of reference for the forms and colours that are being used, and or is it kind of being led intuitively through a place of material exploration and response?
I think the colour for Parade, I think I said this to someone, maybe my mum, I was like, I couldn't have ever made this work in Wellington, because I was living in Wellington before I was up in Whangarei, because the colours are just so different. Like, I don't know, those colours are so Northland, like Northland, like sunset, like it's just like so much oranges and so it's very like specific to that place, I think, for colour. And gesture, the painting gestures, I paint quite intuitively, I think, and there's definitely no like pre-planning or drawing of planning those kind of marks, but just painting quite quickly when I'm doing those marks quickly, and I'm like almost in like a trance-like kind of state, not really thinking much, which is a nice way to paint, but it also can, there's so much room for mistake and like, which I love as well.
So really just like diving into the material, and the paint's kind of got to lean into those, not mistakes, but you know, like those little things you can't quite control. You're going to like lean into the, I don't know, that space of...
like chance.
Totally. Which I think is one of my favourite things about painting, is like when you don't quite know what's going to happen. Those like little pockets of those things. Yeah, but was there... With the forms, was there any like overall kind of linkage to maybe like a landscape or like specific things, or just whatever came?
There was actually, you know, the reason it's called Parade, something I was thinking about that time when I was making it, there was a planet parade in the sky, and my dad, he's like obsessed with like out of space, and he would talk to me about this planet parade all the time, and it was like all of the planets were going to be in line for like a couple nights or something, or like like all in one line, like all, I don't really know like much about it really, but that was definitely on my mind. And I feel like maybe at the end of Parade, like right towards on the right hand side, there's like four like dots in a row, and I feel like it was like the lineup of the planets was like maybe something I was thinking about, but not like direct at all, you know, like just very intuitive and in there.
Beautiful. And then when it came to arranging the pieces, what was that process like? I feel like that would be, because it looks very like even though you can see the seams, it seamlessly looks like a whole painting that's maybe been made with that.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you say that. I feel like I see it as like eight separate paintings, but that was actually such a nice process. What I did is I'd finished all of the work and I had photographed each panel, and I went to Harvey Norman and like printed out the photos. And then I like had them on our kitchen table for a week, and I would just like every morning wake up and rearrange the photos around like until I found like the perfect like sequence. And I'd get like my dad to have a go, I'd get my like family friends to have a go, like rearranging it, and it was like quite a nice thing to share with people.
Quite a collaborative.
And so like I said, there was originally 12, so we cut out like four.
Oh wow.
And lots of the pieces when we did the sewing as well got cut down
So there's lots of parade that's not in parade.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, which I like.
So maybe those are the ghost paintings.
I think those are the ghost paintings. That's true. Oh my God, I love that. Yeah.
And with this quite big shift with this piece and doing it, has it kind of, I don't know, reshaped or like extended your concept of a painting or kind of opened up these new kind of avenues for you?
Yeah, totally. I think I still like struggle to think of it as a painting. Like I do think of it as a sculpture, I think. But it's something I want to do more. And this year I'm really interested in making some parachutes and maybe some kites or, I don't know, I like that it's a curtain and there's like these symbols with a curtain being a thing already and like how that can add to the work in itself. And yeah, I'm interested in that, like object, painting on object or with object.
Yeah, it kind of, it brings a whole other, it's like a painting in the square frame has its own histories and its own thing when you look at it. But you're bringing in that new object, you're already creating a new conversation with the thing. And then also, yeah, it's like really bringing the work into the space and hold it another way than if just on a wall. And having that like person, I don't know, having something that almost like you're in the space of the painting rather than this painting's in the space.
Does that make sense? I know exactly what you mean. I do. And like that's been such the like a really fun thing with parade is when we hang it, like, because it's free hanging canvas, it is in relation to the air and like the space, and it like moves and it's like just totally different experience to painting on canvas. Yeah, it is fascinating. Like I think where it's being hung now at the Pa Homestead, you can't walk around the back, whereas it was originally made so that you could walk around both sides. But I don't like, I do, I don't not like that you can't walk around the back, because I feel like now that it's in hung this way, it like kind of looks more like a painting on a wall because it's like backed up against a wall a little bit, which is interesting, like how it can like change and have all of these different like almost like personalities, like wherever it goes.
All like, these new lives. You're like traveling with like this traveling painting.
Yeah, in this little box.
That's so sweet. It's got like this whole like memories that are linked to it and this like its journey, and then maybe like you have the creases of it traveling with you. It like kind of, it's like this thing that gets more and more. Yeah, and like shifts with every viewing of it, which is really beautiful. And with your piece coming together in this communal space of the group show, how do you feel that your piece speaks to this title, A Moment to Hold, and its kind of surrounding ideas?
A Moment to Hold. Yeah, I guess there's a lot of, when I think of that title, I think of like memories and I think there's a lot of like nostalgia in parade, because I think I was making it in a place where I grew up and like there was lots of like things resurfacing from my childhood, and like that is very much embedded in the work. And I think that there's a lot of kind of like memory in the show, or like that theme keeps coming around. Like I was actually at the show of my uncle yesterday and we were looking at Brunel's painting of the Pavlova. And we were like, oh, that's really like hitting a something with us.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, Soph interviewed her and I think they were talking about that so pinnacle family moment.
It's like such a classic, eh? Like the Pavlova with like the kiwi fruit. I was just like, yeah, and I think there's something quite beautiful about how all of the artists in that show, there's so many generations, like different generations of artists. And yeah, the timeline is like quite beautiful. Like there's obviously the emerging artists like me, Hannah and Brunel, and then there's like older artists like Barbara Tuck, and it's like so beautiful to share that space with them.
That was Ruby Wilkinson speaking to me about her work within A Moment to Hold, showing at Pa Homestead, the Arts House Trust, which is on until the 1st of March. So be sure to go check out her work and all the other work within the show.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
Gorge, we'll be right back, but in the meantime, we've got some songs for you. First up, we've got Blue Vein by Lael Neal.
Thank you. gather your words, gaze at the fields of snow. The garden is gone, the cold wind blown. Kneel down to your mom, hold on to your dad's hands. Maybe they're dead yet, don't forget. You're born with a blue vein, born to the song, born just to know things, then to take off. I'm gonna fly. Guardian angel, gather my losses, keep them all safe till I come to my cross. And gather the weight, gold trick of the world, gap in my girl's teeth, the love that I held. And though it's easier said when it comes from my head, but the needle of truth gives. The fold, meet the arms of my brother, feel the birth of a new age. When I become the other, well, some say the truth springs for reservoir seekers, but I think the truth sings to whoever. Oh,
I believe in like the solar system. I believe in space. I really do believe in space.
Spaced Out. Josh Auraki from Auckland Stardome Observatory and Planetarium talks everything spacey on Spaced Out. 4:40 every other Tuesday.
You ready to read your first ever ad?
Maybe.
Not nervous?
No.
Loosen up, you'll be fine. Just read the script. Off you go.
Tune into breakfast on Mondays. Hear about some books from some pretty smart people, and they love books. You'll hear about, like, books you want to read or maybe you haven't heard of. How was that?
Pretty loose. Let's try another.
It's Loose Reads, Mondays on 95BFM Breakfast, thanks to Time Out Bookstore, 432 Mount Eden Road.
West Coast, choppy.
Regan, wake up.
West Coast.
Honey, you're having those strange nightmares. Oh, no, no, it's not.
1 out of 10 on both coasts.
Oh, God. Father Damien, it's happening again.
Looking for tubular swells? It's the 95BFM Surf Report. Is the West Coast gnarly? Is the East Coast bogus? Do people even still use these words? Find out every morning on Breakfast and every afternoon on Drive. The Totally Radical Surf Report, proudly brought to you by the dudes and dudettes at Provian.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
Elise McDermott is a Tāmaki-based artist whose sculptural and installation practice explores everyday encounters with nostalgia, memory, and cultures of consumerism and production through found objects and materials. In her current exhibition at Room Gallery, Pop Sediment, McDermott has reconstructed and recontextualized these objects' forms, letting familiar references and playful aesthetics of pop culture and our domestic worlds into the gallery and public space. In giving them these altered identities, the work serves as an opportunity to reconsider their value, challenging our pre-existing conceptions of these objects' worth through this material language. I had a kōrero with Elise McDermott about the show and her overall practice.
My name is Elise McDermott, and I make installations and sculptures mainly, but sometimes assemblages. A little bit of painting and collage as well, a lot of mixed mediums. And I use secondhand objects and found objects from like around the streets or in like vintage stores around the home. And I make them into kind of interpretations of different interiors, like from houses to commercial spaces, waiting rooms, places where I think that people are having experiences or are situated in. I do this mainly because I think, especially in contemporary and modern society, we are surrounded a lot by excess. And when I look around us, I see just like an abundance of things and textures and surfaces all the time. And I think it's important to kind of bring a light on the way we use things and what we do with them afterwards, and kind of how they withstand time compared to us.
Talking about your current show at Room, Pop Sediment, there appears to be these common threads of nostalgia and adolescence, pop culture and memory, where, like geological sediment, you've accumulated these found and secondhand objects, deconstructed and recontextualized their forms, giving them these altered and new identities and structures in the space. I guess to kind of begin speaking about the show, and I guess you kind of touched on it there, but are you able to speak to this choice of subject and what interests you in this exploration of memory and nostalgia?
Yeah, well, I think society is kind of at this intersection where I find that we're constantly grasping onto like tradition or past content, nostalgic content, but at the same time we're always trying to move forward and looking towards the future. And I feel like with Pop Sediment, we're looking at kind of a theoretical figure. It's not my things or about me as the artist or any experiences I've had. It's just experiences that are happening in these spaces. When you are accumulating all the materials together, grouping them, curating them, that's when these kinds of meanings come out. where people are looking at these things and then relating to each other, because we're seeing things that we recognize and maybe things that we also don't understand as well. So that's really what pop sediment is all about, and the layering, the physical layering of the artworks and the physical layering of the objects is where we see like this hypothetical idea of what it might mean or how valuable it is compared to items or objects being used how we might normally assume, like in our homes, we're using them for a purpose or a function. But when we move them into a gallery-like room, we can begin to see what they kind of have to say on their own and what we might assume from that as well.
Totally. I feel like there's quite a contrast between, I guess, these ideas of memory and nostalgia, which feel like quite soft concepts compared to these ideas of like production over consumption that you're also kind of touching on simultaneously. How do you kind of see that relationship between these quite contrasting concepts?
So I think the softness of the objects comes through naturally through its traces of use, and then the subject itself emerges when we see that use and when we see evidence of it coming from somewhere else or evidence of it relating to the current situation. So I think the character that's emerging, we're assuming it's this adolescent or this teenager, is coming through in these visual relations that we have between like colors, how media is presented to us, the kind of demographics that different media looks like. And those kind of things converge, I think, and the nostalgic tone comes through in the post-encounter, but it's not like a driving factor, or it's not about one specific nostalgic viewpoint.
I guess I want to talk a little bit more specifically about the material and the objects in the show. I understand that this gravitation towards found and secondhand material is quite strong in your practice, and I think in this show viewers will quite easily find at least one reference that speaks to them, whether it be the reference to the 2000s anti-piracy ad on a satin pillowcase or the nylon magazines or a keychain. Are you able to kind of speak to these object choices more specifically? And you kind of touched on it a little bit at the beginning there, but the process of obtaining and locating them as well.
It kind of originally started out as trying to be a little bit more sustainable, but I think it's more of an accessibility choice at this point. I'm constantly looking through like things through my house, other people's houses, willing. And I think getting secondhand objects or found objects roots these ideas in reality. When you're making something new from something that already exists, we already kind of have this idea of what it might be. And then when you start to combine them, these new forms start to emerge and it becomes more complex in meaning and maybe more relatable to different types of people. So when I'm collecting, I'm usually looking for things that are interesting in form. I'm not specifically looking for something for like a specific show. Like, I have a large amount of items.
That is stored. You're a hoarder.
Yeah. And usually I'll pick and choose, kind of bring them together and see what kind of, honestly, what kind of vibe is coming from them as they start to be grouped. And often my works, I deconstruct and use the parts in another work as well. So it's kind of like a permanent process of recycling almost, which I think feeds into this kind of non-linear timeline that's happening.
Yeah, I guess with that, I guess in process, does that feel like you're more materially driven or conceptually driven? What comes first, the idea or the object?
The objects definitely come first. They're always sitting there and I just kind of slot them in. I see them as almost like a jigsaw puzzle. They kind of fit together and then I can kind of start to see a story almost coming out. but it's not a story that I feel I'm dictating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't have, like, a plan or, like, a sketch in mind and then make that artwork. It's a very playful process. A lot of temporary fixtures, throwing things together, taking them apart, definitely.
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but there does seem to subconsciously be this kind of element of sentimentality in the work. And I don't know, I kind of felt like walking in felt like it was almost like a window into like a teenage bedroom of sorts, which could elicit all sorts of feelings. And I guess in that sense, you're kind of bringing in the domestic into this gallery space, into a more public space. How do you kind of see that public and private tension and the way it recontextualizes the work in these objects?
I think sentimentality as a whole is constantly shifting, and it's shifting through ownership, through placement, through the economy. So when we're assigned to identify these objects and bring them into spaces like galleries, it's really questioning value. It's really questioning value. It's about, why do you think this might be important? Is it important to you? Could it be important to someone else? And I find there's really no fixed answer when we start to look at value, especially with these items. I think they're equally sentimental as they are cold or removed. I try to keep them a little bit ambiguous. So there isn't really a definite answer going on. It's almost a little bit uncanny at times. Kind of like within our world, we recognize some of the bits, and then other pieces, they seem to fit in with the narrative that's happening, but they're not really telling us anything specific that we can accurately pinpoint, which I think is the same with value. And when we think about our domestic spaces, we are surrounded by so many items that we've like either inherited, or maybe we saved up to buy it, or maybe someone gave it to us, or we don't know where it came from. And when we're taking them out of those spaces and putting them into galleries, it just makes this, it's almost like exposing them. It's like taking all the walls away and exposing these little like environment settings that are happening within these four walls that we're then committing to our memory.
Yeah, allowing people to see them for what they are outside of the context that they usually find themselves in.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you talk more about the work. I guess for viewers who do go and see the show, do you have any hopes for people engaging with the work?
I hope that people kind of embrace the unknown, or something that you might not understand, like, even myself, even after I make the works, I'm still kind of feel like I'm having a one-sided conversation with them where I'm asking it what it means or what I should tell people it means, and it's just sitting there. Yeah, and I think people should be really excited about the show because I think there should be maybe a little bit more playfulness within the art world, and not so much rigidness towards how things should look. I think it should be more about like how you're feeling or what they might make you think about after you leave, which would be exciting.
That was artist Elise McDermott speaking to me about her show Pop Sediment, currently on at Room Gallery until the 21st of February.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
We'll be right back to give you your arts guide. In the meantime, here's some Erykah Badu.
Manifest with
intellects do not believe in God, but they fear us just the same. Oh, oh no, no, no.
My life keeps moving like a rolling stone.
Ooh, oh no, no, no.
Oh, back to the break of dawn.
I go on and on and on and on.
My life keeps moving like a rolling
ooh,
stone.
Ooh, on and on and on and on.
God damn it, I'ma sing my song.
I was born underwater with $3 and 6 dimes. Yeah, you may laugh, 'cause you did not do your math. Like 1, 2, 3. Damn, y'all feel it? Like 1, 2, 3. The earth keeps turning. Oh, what a day. What a day, what a day. The man that knows something knows that he knows nothing at all. Does it seem colder in your summertime and hotter in your fall? If we were made in his image, then call us by our names. Most intellectual.
The God job.
Ooh, wait on and on.
You're listening to Radio Bosom.
I told you I didn't want to go to this dinner. You know I don't go for those ones that you bother about. So when they say something that makes me start to simmer, that fancy wine won't put this fire out. Oh, kick me under the table all you want. I won't shut up, I won't shut up. Kick me under the table all you want. I won't shut up, I won't shut up. I'd like to buy you a pair of pillow-soled hiking boots to help you with your climb, or rather to help the bodies that you step over along your route so they won't hurt like mine. Kick me under the table all you want. I won't shut up, I won't shut up. Kick me under the table all you want. I won't shut up, I won't shut up. If I don't wanna go, leave me alone. Don't push me, cookie. Don't push me, don't you push me. If you get me to go and I open my mouth to the fucking mutton that they're talking about, you could pout. But don't you, don't you, don't you, don't you, don't you shush me. Keep me under the table all you want. I won't shut up, I won't shut up. Keep me under the table all you want. I won't shut up, I won't shut up. Kick me under the table all you want. I won't shut up, I won't shut up. Kick me under the table all you want. I won't shut up, I won't shut up. And if I don't wanna go, leave me alone. Don't push me, cookie. Don't push me, don't you push me. If you get me to go and I open my mouth to the fucking mutton that they're talking about, you can pout. But don't you, don't you, don't you, don't you, don't you shush me.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists. It's paintings in that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau, as mentioned on the show, Elise McDermott's Pop Sediment is on at Room Gallery until the 21st of February. Also alongside Elise's show is Tia Barrett's Pātaka Wā, also on until the 21st of February, so check it out as well.
Also mentioned on the show, A Moment to Hold is currently on at the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead until the 1st of March.
Irunga o Ngā Puke, Travels Over Feeling by Jamie R.H. is currently on at Window Gallery until the 11th of February.
Serenading Image Worlds, a survey exhibition of Bill Hammond's practice, as well as Jack Hadley's Assemblies, are currently on at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery until the 22nd of Feb. Short art guide today, gallery are still on summer vacay. However, if you have something you want on the arts guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki. Nei te mihi, kia koutou katoa, I kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for us on Various Artists for today. Nga mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us.
Elise McDermott.
And Ruby Wilkinson.
Nei rā hoki te mihi, kia koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95BFM.com or check out our Instagram at 95BFM Various Artists for more.
Ka hoki mai mātoa, te rā wiki. Next up is The Land of the Good Groove with Mari. My name is Sophie.
I'm Maya.
And that was Various Artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95BFM. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.